Joining the show, we have former MLB umpire whose career spanned over three decades in the major leagues. We have none other than Mr. Dale Scott. How you doing, buddy?
Craig, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Oh, no problem. Now, how's the West Coast treating you out there these days? I know I'm here in West by God, Virginia. It's got up to 80s this week from 50, a big jump, but we're dealing with it. So how's it out there?
Well, I'm in Palm Springs. And,
oh, right now. Okay.
Yeah, it's like mid-90s today, and it's heating up. It's getting there. It's looking good. I'm spending most of the time down here, although I, you know, still have a place in Portland, and I'll be going up there next week, but for about 10 days. But yeah, it's nice and warm, and it's going to get nice and hot here pretty soon.
So the heat don't bother you?
It does, but
it's bad for me. I wear shorts anytime it's above 40 degrees because I burn up. I'm telling you, like, I'm like a polar bear.
Yeah, well, I run hot too, which, you know, when I was umpiring, I mean, like when I in Miami, for example, when they played at the Joe Robbie Stadium, whatever it's called now, but it was so humid and so warm. And when I worked the plate there, I would just be drenched sweating. And in fact, you know, by the seventh inning or so, my ball bag would be, I couldn't keep the ball. It would be damp because my ball bag was completely, I'd have to have the ball boy to, you know, throw new balls out there. I mean, that's how hard, you know, hot I run. I hated the humidity. I'm not used to that. You know, it's a drier, here in the desert, here in Palm Springs, and in Portland, you know, we get some humidity, but it's nothing like St. Louis and Atlanta. And so, yeah, I was a wet mess when that happened.
Oh, I don't even want to think about it. So I went down to St. Pete like 2 years ago, and I went to the Tampa Bay Rays game for the first time ever, and everyone wants to shit all over that stadium because it is kind of dark and dingy and it's older Tropicana Field, but I was happy to be 72 degrees watching baseball, brother.
Yeah, listen, there's something to be said, but you know the perfect fit really is to have a retractable dome. So those you know, majority of the nights, like in Florida, you're going to have it shut because the humidity and the afternoon storms and the stuff that goes on down there. But those times that you could have it open and it's not miserable in the you know, spring or late fall, it's not bad. But yeah, it killed me, and I liked the dome. The other thing I like about domes, as far as an umpire, was the fact I didn't have to make any decisions on rain, right? I mean, it could be pouring and we're going to play, and there's no on and off and me trying to figure it out and having a pissed off owner because it's, you know, they want to get the gate in and, you know, the whole thing. So domes were advantageous a lot of times.
Well, and no one even thinks about that perspective. So like, it always depends on what inning you're in, how many outs there are.
Right.
And you're like, at what point, I know it's pouring down the damn rain right now, but what point do I'm like, get the ground screw out here because it's just not safe anymore. And like, it's all on your shoulders.
Well, yeah. And you're only as good as the information you're given, you know, and sometimes you're told, we got, you know, we got a nice window for an hour and a half, and then 45 minutes later it's raining, you know, or, you know, they'll say, oh man, it's going to be sopped in here for a couple hours. And you kind of dig in and you got to get the game in and all that stuff. And, you know, an hour later it opens up. So, I mean, you're only as good as what you're told and that kind of stuff. You know, one of the worst I ever had is I called a game in Boston before it started, about an hour before it started, because of this horrible front coming in. I talked to two meteorologists. They both said it's not if it's going to hit, but when. And it's going to hit. And I'll be damned. It was a day game. It was a day getaway game, 2 o'clock game, I think, on Sunday. It never rained. It got to like a mile from Fenway and this big front and just poured, but never got all the way over. We called the game. It was an off day. Philly was there. It was an off day for everybody. So we all had to stay over and play Monday when we could have played on Sunday. But of course, being the fine crew chief that I was that day and going on the information I had, we called it. So that was a lot of fun. Took some hits on that one. But yeah, it's, you know, no matter what's told or what you see or what you're told, you know, Mother Nature has its way of doing whatever it wants to do. So you just got to have to go with that.
Well, I'm going to give some background information here to the audience in case they don't know. Just going through information here. Before the leagues merged, you was in the AL from 86 to 99. Then when they combined the leagues from the umpire's perspective, you was still umpiring from 2000 to 2017. Your last game was in 2017. I read that you had four concussions in a span of 5 years, at which point you're like, maybe I've had enough. But people don't really even consider the fact, that, I mean, we know catchers get beat up, we know the umpires get beat up. Obviously, you have your mask on, but people don't even think about the concussions perspective. So, just talk to me about that for a minute.
Well, it's a big deal. It used to be, Greg, I mean, there's many times I'm sure in the when I was in the minor leagues early in my career in Major League Baseball, where I took a shot and probably should have left the game, but didn't. It used to be a joke. Oh yeah, you get some dirt on your shoes and you're seeing stars, and all this stuff. Well, we found out as time went on, especially with the NFL, that this is actually a pretty big deal. And it can be some tough consequences down the line for the rest of your life. And so we started to baseball started to take it much, much more seriously in the early 2000s, and I'm glad they did. I was getting close to retirement anyway. I was thinking 2019 was going to be my last season. I turned 60 that summer. And I thought, it's a good time to get out. Well, when I got hit in 2017 during my recovery, and that was early, it was like the fifth game. During my recovery, I spoke with three different specialists. I it was my second concussion in about 8.5 months, and I just, I was so close to retirement. I thought, you know what, I'm so far I'm okay, but I'm playing on house money, and I think I'm going to walk away. So I decided to not to come back. And hung it up at the end of that year. And so, it wasn't the way I wanted to go out on a stretcher and a neck brace in Toronto. wasn't what I planned, but I haven't looked back. I made that decision. I'm happy with it. And I had a great career. I really had nothing else to prove. And the risk reward, if that next one is the one that, puts me out for the rest of my life for, headaches or memory issues or any of that stuff that can happen with head blows and concussions. So I decided to walk away.
Yeah, I was going to ask, did you have any regrets? And you just answered it. But the fact is, I mean, you had a career spanning over 3 decades. So, I mean, you like you said, you did your thing. I mean, what else is there to prove? I'm going to try to look it up here in a second. I saw it earlier, but there's a great quote from the famous Ernie Harwell about you, about
Oh, is that
baseball.
right?
Yeah, I'm going to look it up here in a second. But for those of you that also don't realize, just more of the resume. You appeared in 3 World Series, 98, 01, and 04, 3 All-Star games, 6 LCSs, 12 Division Series. So that's a lot of big moments, man. That like, the spotlight's there. There's a lot of pressure. Of the 3 World Series, is there one moment that stands out more than the rest?
Well, yeah, they all had their own moments. 98 was my first one. It was all new. It was all thrilling. It was a Yankee sweep of the Padres. 90 or 2004 was a Red Sox sweep of the Cardinals, which was
Broke the
breaking the
curse, baby.
curse. Yeah, exactly, and all that. And I've got a lot of friends in Boston, and so that. Although they won it all in St. Louis. I'll tell you what, the middle one though was unbelievable. It was right after 9/11, 8 weeks after 9/11, 14 miles from ground zero. I had the plate game three in New York, which was the first game after the in Arizona. President Bush threw out the first pitch. We had a Secret Service guy in an umpire uniform standing with us on the field. There was a couple Secret Service in groundskeeper uniforms standing on the field. The security that night and that entire series was insane, and rightfully so. And the nation was in shock. We still were in shock. And of course, New York was also. And that was an unbelievable series from the standpoint. I had two sweeps to bookend it, but that was a seven gamer. Each the winning team was the home team won every game. And there was a couple blown saves and blown, in Yankee. It was just an unbelievable series, especially with the backdrop of 9/11. So that's the one and I had in game three, I had a play, a fair foul type thing that the Yankees thought they scored a run. They didn't. It was real, did the ball touch him or not? I'm hoping as I called foul and everything, that it didn't touch him. I was hoping I was backed up by some cameras by Fox. And luckily I was, but yeah, that, it was just it was a huge moment and one that I'll never forget for sure.
I mean, we can make the argument, and I'll say it to this day, that I feel like baseball helped the country heal right after 9/11, because I remember, I think it was the Braves and the Mets came back that first time after it happened. And, you know, you could still tell the players were shook. They were wearing the NYPD, the fire department hats. But I feel like at that time, baseball had a huge part in bringing us back together.
Well, it really did. You know, the timing of 9/11, of course, is the September of baseball, which is always usually very exciting. Everybody took some time off, rightfully so, to try to digest what the heck was going on, and everything got pushed back. But yeah, I know it was the Mets. I don't know if it was Atlanta, but yeah, they had like the first game played in New York, the first one back, and I think Piazza had a home run to win the game or something.
I can tell you, Dale, it was the Braves. I'm a huge Braves fan, and Piazza hit that one over the fence, because I remember Bobby Valentine and Bobby Cox, and you know, but I remember that. But like, what better way? I'm a Braves fan, and we lost, but my God, I mean, the Big Apple starts raising after Piazza hits that home run. You can't make this shit up.
Well, you know that World Series, you know, you're either a Yankee fan or you're not,
right?
And when you're not, usually you hate them.
I agree.
I think that World Series, people were pulling for the Yankees just because it was New York and what had right. happened, and ironically, you have Mariano blow a save in game 7 and they lose the series in the most unconventional way, because he never blows saves, right? I mean right. Had a lead going into the bottom of the ninth and ends up losing the game. So that whole thing is, you know, that whole series and that whole time was so unique. But yeah, I you really felt like people actually wanted or kind of rooting for the Yankees just because it was New York and everything that had been going on.
And Mo, man, he was unanimous for a reason, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, nasty stuff.
You know what's coming, and you still can't hit that split.
No, I mean, he right-handed hitters. The pitch would cut, it was inside the whole way, and then right when it got to the plate, just came over. Just hitters would just go, I don't know what to do with that. You know, I mean, it was like they knew it was coming almost, and it would freeze them. He was amazing.
So I found this quote here for you, and I'm gonna read it to you. But to me, it's the greatest compliment you can get for an umpire. Okay, as the late great Ernie Harwell once said to me about Dale, a great umpire is like a great driver in traffic. You never notice they're there. That was Dale Scott. He had a great consistent strike zone, and I don't recall him ever missing a call on the bases. So pretty high praise there from a Hall of Famer.
I've always liked Ernie. Ernie was a gentleman when I, first came in. My very first game ever in the big leagues was Detroit. It was in Kansas City, and he came by and said hello, like he always did, at least once a series. I'm humbled by that from Ernie Harwell. Are you kidding me?
Exactly. So a few notable games I'd like to go over real quick. I know in May of 88, you had your little scuffle there with Billy Martin. It's all over the place. You all got into it. He actually threw dirt at you, I believe, at some point. Yeah, got suspended 3 games for that. So what was the argument about? I mean, what caused all this?
Well, it was Memorial Day, 1988, Monday, obviously Memorial Day in Oakland. And it was on ABC Monday Night Baseball. They used to do that. That's how long ago this was. It was my third year in the American League, and I had first base. It actually wasn't even my call. The game started at 5, just after 5 Pacific time, for TV. And so, the grounds crew had watered down the infield just to keep the dust down like they normally do. Well, now we're in the first hitter in the bottom of the third, and the dirt's still kind of a little damp, you know, not dusty. And Walt Weiss led off, hit a line drive to Bobby Meacham at second. It was a question, did he catch it or not? It was right at the ground. It could have been skipped into his glove. Rick Reed was the second base umpire. He said no catch. From first base, I'll be honest with you, I got what Rick's got, because I didn't have it obvious one way or the other. It's just, you know, but I, you know, it was not even my play. I'm just getting ready for a play at first if it's not a no catch, which is what he ruled. But Bobby Meacham assumed that he caught it, or thought he caught it, and didn't even look at Rick. He just started throwing it around the horn. Well, even if Rick was wrong and Meacham, you know, had seen that he'd called no catch, he would have had Weiss out by 3 steps, 4 steps, you know, it was easy out. But anyway, he ends up at first, right? So arguing with Rick, here comes Billy out of the first base dugout. As he's running by me, he says, "You saw him catch the ball." And I said, "No, Billy, he trapped it." And I don't know if he heard me, but as he's going out to Rivik. So immediately, crew chief was Richie Garcia. He comes out. He was working the plate, and he got us together real quick and said, "Did you have anything different?" I said, "I got nothing different." You know, and so we stuck with the no catch call. And so he's arguing with Rick, and Richie's there, and John Hirschbeck, third base umpire, kind of comes over to see what's going on. And I'm standing around. I'm the youngest guy, obviously, third year guy. I'm just minding my own business. All of a sudden, Billy's arguing. He looks at me and he goes, "You saw him catch the ball." I said, "No, Billy, he trapped it." And he said, "You're full of shit." Well, you can't say that. He can say that's full of shit, or he can, you know, but once you personalize it and say you are something, you're going to get ejected. And that's exactly what I did. And of course, that set off the alarms. He was trying to kick dirt on me. And because the dirt was still a little damp from the earlier in the game when they watered it down, he couldn't get any dirt. He had like two kicks and he couldn't get any dirt. He did just nick my knee with his foot. And you can see in the video, I'm pointing down, you know, I was saying, "You kicked me, Billy, you kicked me," you know, and he's, you know, the whole time he's saying, "You mother, blah, blah, blah," you know, yeah, as he's doing this. So now after two kicks, he can't get the dirt to get on me. So he just bends down, picks up two handfuls. And he does a nice little chest pass right onto my beautiful American League sweater. And then, you know, I was going over Richie's shoulder and they're going after, and finally he left. Yeah. That was the first time that I had a situation where I was in the whirlwind. You know, it was a story for several days. A couple of weeks before that in Texas, he had kicked dirt on Tim Welke. Welke ejected him on some play and he had kicked dirt on him, and there was no suspension. This time, you know, they got him for 3 days. And of course our union thought that was a little, lack because, you know, just because he'd done it now twice. And so it was a story for like 3 or 4 or 5 days in a row, you know, and that was the first time I'd ever been in, you know, we don't like to be the story, right? That's not what we're there for. And, so that, you know, that was the first time I got to weather that kind of stuff. And it was a good character builder. Let's put it that way.
So after interviewing like multiple players, you know, I interviewed Jim Joyce. It blows my mind with you guys that I just said 88, Billy Martin did this. And you're like, "Yep, it's Memorial Day. I remember it vividly. I knew who the second base umpire was. I knew Walt Weiss was doing." I'm like, it's insane to me that how it's muscle memory. I feel like every big leaguer knows this, but it's almost like you have to be at that level.
You know, it is amazing, especially when you consider, I would, you know, you'd have to give me a multiple choice to figure out what I had for lunch today. but you know, certain situations, your recall, like you said, I've seen it with players. "Oh yeah, that's right. I was a 2-2 count and this guy and this," or, you know, whatever. And it's just, it's weird because it's not like I have the greatest memory in the world, but there are certain things that I specifically remember. And when, you know, talking with you, like just conversation, something is said and it'll spark a memory that I haven't thought about in a long, long time, but suddenly it's like, "Oh yeah, that happened in, you know, Oakland and blah, blah, blah." And it would spark something that you haven't even thought about for a long time. So it really is amazing how that happens. You know, you were talking about all this stuff that I've done, my resume, and it, you know, it's just a thrill for me to think that I participated in that, was able to do that. Right. But what's funny, Greg, is, you know, when you're working, you're just working. You're like a little mouse on a wheel. You know, you're just going and going and going, and you're traveling and you're doing this. And in the off season, you're getting ready for the next season. You really don't have a lot of time, or at least I certainly didn't. You know, you see things on the field, that World Series, and you go, "My God, this is part of history." And you know, that's all that. But you kind of file it away and you just keep moving forward because you're working. You've got another game. You've got another, you know, you can't dwell on stuff. After I left the field, and after a while, you know, being away from baseball, suddenly I would see something on, you know, MLB Network, a classic game that I'm working, or somebody will bring up something. "Well, you know, you were the this and that." And I finally started to kind of, you know, look back on my career and kind of look back on some of the big moments that I was a part of, or at least I was on the field for, and it almost amazes me. I'm going, "Oh my God, I was there for that." You know, this happened when, you know, this day or this day, the World Series, playoffs, even games that aren't postseason and stuff, milestones and stuff. So it's funny how when you're doing it, you're just doing it, and yeah, you realize things, or that's pretty historic, that's pretty cool, but you just move forward. It wasn't until you get off the field and kind of have some perspective of how everything went out that you really got, you know, for me, I was just like, wow, that's amazing, really.
Yeah, I mean, so a few of those non-playoff games I've got wrote down here. This one was crazy to me, and I remember this because I had the baseball card. July 1st, 1990, you're behind the home plate when Andy Hawkins for the Yankees pitched a no-hitter, but he lost. That's not
Yeah.
normal.
No, it's not normal, and it's more rare to lose a no-hitter than to win one. And they're kind of rare, and when you consider how many games are being played. Yeah, it was the Comiskey Park. It was the last year of Comiskey, I believe. And he had a no-hitter. The Yankees, obviously the visiting team, they made Jim Leyritz had a 2-run error in left field in the bottom of the eighth, a couple of runs scored. I believe it was no score until that. The White Sox scored a couple runs, and then the floodgates kind of opened or whatever. Yankees came up top of the ninth. They went out. Andy Hawkins never gave up a hit. He only pitched 8 innings, and he lost. And that was a no hitter by scoring rules or whatever until that winter,
I
where
saw they
they
changed it. They changed
ch
it.
changed it. They said you have to pitch a minimum 9 innings to qualify for a no hitter. And so,
So is
you
that
know, I
the
had
Andy
an
Hawkins rule?
it's exactly right. And I thought, that's not a good rule. Look, and now
Yeah.
you're taking away my, which is, like I said, rarer than a no hitter win. So, yeah, I finally had to get my official no hitter a few years later in Minnesota.
Yeah, 427-94 up and comer Scott Erickson for the Twins versus the Brewers.
Yeah, that was it. That's your classic dome stadium where we probably wouldn't have played that game. It was a horrible day. Snow mixed with rain. It was late April in Minnesota. And I actually all day, I was basically in my room all day. I felt terrible. I thought I had the flu coming on. It was like, I got the plate tonight. And just didn't feel 100%. And you walk out there and you have to call a no, not have to, you have the privilege of calling a no hitter. You know, it's amazing. That's the thing about this game that is so amazing is, you never ever know what's going to happen. I mean, it's this, it's the same game every when I'm umpiring, just like last night and just like tomorrow and just like today. This is going to be the same rules that we're playing by, but I have no idea if I'm going to walk out there and have a 17 to 15 slugfest or a perfect game or a no hitter or the time I worked Minnesota at Fenway, Gary Gaetti turns two triple plays. First and second, no outs. Third, second, first routine kind of triple plays. He called both of them,
Two triple plays in the same game.
in the same game, which had never happened before. And he, in fact, after the second one, when he came out, he goes, how many times do you think that's happened? I said, of course, I didn't. I said, I don't know. Well, we found out that that was the first. But yeah, you just never know what you're going to have. When you walk out there, you have no idea what kind of game it's going to be. And as an umpire, hopefully you are ready for whatever, but whatever happens, we have to deal with it. If it's a goofy play, a weird situation, I mean, I had game five of that a divisional series, Texas at Toronto, when the seventh inning took like 1 hour and 10 minutes. Russell Martin was throwing the ball back, got a little lazy, hit Kim on the bat. He wasn't doing anything. He just standing there, runner at third. He scores. A place went up for grabs. We had to clear the teams. We had two ejections. We had a protest. And then the next thing you know, in the bottom of the inning, Batista hits a 3-run home run or whatever around the world. The bat flip. We have benches. I mean, you never know what's going to happen. I've
I know
never
there was a
seen that
damn bat
happen.
flip. It was Batista, man. I can tell you that.
But I
Oh.
mean, how many times has Russell Martin thrown the ball to the pitcher? I mean, a couple million, and he just got a little lazy. I mean, I've never seen that, but you have to deal with whatever happens and hope you're ready and prepared for it.
They have a remedy for that on Major League Two. He didn't probably read up on his Playboys that day because Rube Baker had to read up on the articles so he could not think about throwing it back to the pitcher.
And that's why they get Playboys for the articles. That's
Yeah. But back to what you said to piggyback off what you said, you don't know what's going to happen. And to me, that's what makes baseball the greatest game in the world. It's been around for over 150 years, and you can literally walk out on the field and see something for the first time ever.
I mean, again, that example is one example, but I've had almost 4,000 regular season games, over 90 postseason games. You know, I had 5 years in the minor leagues. I'd never seen that happen. And that was, well, and you know, that was 2015. I'd worked a lot of games by that time. So you just, it's exactly right. You really don't know. And when you think you've seen it all, you haven't. And I know for umpires, and I get this when I talk to college and high school umpires and stuff, and I said, don't think you know it all. Don't think that you've learned all you need to learn or all you're going to learn, because you haven't. Trust me, I was learning from the last day that I worked a game. You know, there's always something out there, always something new, and you can't, as an umpire, you can't think, well, I've seen it all now. I can handle anything. What, really? Because the first time you think that, you're going to screw something up.
Amen.
So, you know, you just have to be ready for anything.
So the last two I got in here, the notable games, obviously you worked the bases on two of Verlander's no hitters. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah.
Dude's still playing, still balling. He's going to come back here, I think, next week. He's turned 41 this year, but still, you know, they still expect big things out of him in Houston.
Well, you know, a funny thing about his first one, Ron Culpa was on my crew, and we were in Oakland. Ron had the plate. And Curt Schilling threw. He had a perfect game into the ninth inning, and he, I'm pretty sure it was two outs in the ninth inning, and he gave up a single. And
you're talking about Schilling.
What's that?
You're talking about Schilling.
Yeah, Schilling. Yeah.
Shannon Stewart hit it.
Oh, so see now. You say you don't remember this stuff. So. We come into the locker room, and of course, Ron Culpa, you go, damn, I thought I was going to have my first no-hitter. You know, as a plate umpire, it's a thrill. You know, now you're not going out there to think, oh, I'm going to give this guy a no-hitter. But you, when the game, you know, presents itself, and you're thinking, you know, it would be cool if I worked the plate on a no-hitter. It's cool when you work the bases on a no-hitter or a perfect game. So Ron said, man, I thought I had my first one. I said, I did too. Sure as heck, the next time he had the plate, so 4 games later, we rotate. His next plate job is the game in Detroit where Verlander throws a no-hitter. So he went from a, you know, one out away from a perfect game and just missing it. And then the very next time he straps it on, he has a no-hitter in Detroit. So, again, you never know what's going to happen.
So I know how pitchers do when they're having a no-hitter. No one talks about it. He sits by himself. So does the umpires between innings when y'all – I don't know if you go out and talk to each other – do you all have a routine where if there's a perfect game or a no hitter going on, do you hush hush, or is it just more business like as usual for you guys?
Yeah. You know, usually, I mean, you don't talk to the plate umpire a ton during the game between innings. The base guys will talk more here and there. Not saying you don't, but you know, if we're getting into the sixth, seventh inning and there's no hit, unless I need to tell the plate guy something about something that you know, work wise, that something's going on, I don't need to go down there and just say, hey, you know,
yeah, I gotcha.
Now, I don't ever recall in the umpire world having that unwritten rule that you don't talk, you know, this and that.
Yeah.
But it's more like just we would do that anyway on a really intense close game or something. You just don't need to talk to the guy unless you need to talk to the guy. You know, now the base guys are a little different. And we would say on the bases, well, I wonder who's going to get his no hit. but normally we, there's no rule that I know of, unwritten rule in umpiring, but I normally wouldn't bring it up.
All right, I'm going to shift gears on you real quick, and I know you're ready for this. So, huge Oregon Ducks fan. The college landscape of college football, basketball has changed as we know it. There's no longer a Pac-12. You're now in the Big Ten. What do you think about the move? And are you excited about how we're going to all these super conferences?
Well, I hated to see the Pac-12 disintegrate. I grew up with the Pac-8, Pac-10, Pac-12. The rivalries, the regional rivalries, Oregon was just horrific when I was a kid in football and basketball. UCLA would kill us, you know, everybody would kill us, but UCLA in basketball. Then one year when I was like in ninth grade, UCLA came to Mac Court and we beat them. Huge upset, you know, it was a big, but I mean, you always had these things growing up and the regional stuff, and it's all on the West Coast and this and that. And I just loved it. I mean, the Oregon State football game, which they call the Civil War, in 1971, my dad took me. Since 1971, I've only missed four of them.
Wow.
I think I've been to 48 out of 52 or something like that. And I'm not counting 2020 when nobody went. So that was a big deal. You know, every other year you go to Corvallis, you know, I lived in Eugene, you know, and that kind of stuff. And now they're going to play this year because they're not in the same conference. They're going to play in September. It's always used to be either right before or right after Thanksgiving. And it just seems weird, man.
I
Now
gotcha.
I'm kind of excited about Big Ten. I went to Ohio State a few years ago when the Ducks went there and beat them, by the way. I've already booked my trip to the Big House in November for the Duck Michigan game this year. Ohio State comes to Autzen this year. That, you know, there's going to be some excitement there. But if I had my druthers, if we could untie and get this back to some normalcy, I'd love to have the Pac-12 the way it was. And not this super conference crap that's going on.
I felt the same way exactly because I'm a WVU fan. When we left the Big East, we had our backyard brawl similar to Oregon State with Pittsburgh. And like it's a full out knockout, just drag out brawl. It really is what it is. And we used to play every year. We recently got it back. They're in ACC, we're in the Big 12. So it just don't feel the same. But you know, what do you do? But college football is very different these days. Everybody's making a lot of money and a lot of super conferences. I mean, it is what it is, but we just got to adapt. I guess now we're just the old folks in the room screaming at the clouds.
Exactly. Well, I used to be when I used to walk to school uphill and
So, lastly, and I'm going to let you go because we've taken up too much of your time already. In 2022, you published a memoir of the Umpire's Out, Calling the Game, and Living My True Self. If you'd like to go into that real quick and then tell us where we can find that on what platforms.
Well, you can find out all the, you know, Amazon, Goodreads, you know, online. You can order at a local bookstore or whatever. I wasn't going to write a book. I had no desire to write a book. A lot of retired umpires have done that. But Rob Nyer, who helped me write it, who also lives in Portland, you know, he's the one that suggested, yeah, but Dale, you have a story, you have your baseball story, and you've got great stories, and you've been on the field for a lot of stuff,
Right.
but you also have a different story journey that no one has. And I think that should come out. And he was, I, you know, he was right. When I came out publicly in 2014, the feedback I got was unbelievable. It was so positive. It was, you know, I didn't know really what to expect. But a lot of that feedback were people saying, you really helped me in my life, just hearing your story and that, and you
Probably
know,
the inspiration, you know?
well, you know, here's a major league umpire and he, you know, he's gay. I mean, how I can, you know, they gave him strength. You know, I remember one guy said, I'm not out of that closet door yet, but I'm a step closer. One said that, you know, I told my best friend and a coworker, which I had, you know, it was all very positive stuff. So when Rob was talking about the book and people had always told me, you need to write a book, you need to write a book. I finally kind of changed my tune on that and went ahead with Rob's help and wrote it. And I'm glad I did. I first of all, I enjoyed writing. I enjoyed the whole process. I learned a lot from it. And I've had just unbelievable feedback, you know, positive feedback both from baseball fans and people that love to hear these stories. And people always say the umpires have the best stories. And then also from my personal journey and the feedback I've had for that. I went to 8 different MLB Pride nights, you know, touring for that. I'm going to the Red Sox invited me. I'll be there in June. So yeah, I'm glad I did it. You can get it. There's also umpiredalescott.com, my website. I don't sell the books there, but I have, you know, you can see where you can buy the books. And so yeah, it's been very good. I'm really happy I did it.
Well, I can sit here and talk baseball all day. I really appreciate you coming on, brother. And I would love to do it again in the future if you're up to it. But I appreciate your time, man. And as soon as we get this cleaned up, and I'll get the link out to you, and we'll be ready to roll. Sound good?
Absolutely. Listen, anytime you know how to get a hold of me, and I'd be happy to talk more baseball.
All right, I appreciate you, Dale. Take care,
You
okay,
bet.
buddy?
You bet.